Love is slowing you down, my lady. I will catch you at last. If you love much more.
Yours, mine, theirs.
Let's go. All right. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Yours, Mine, and Theirs, the first Yours, Mine, and Theirs of 2019. We had a really great year last year, I think we hit 45 movies, all that. I'm rambling on. Anyway, I'm John. Wow. Who's with me?
Hey, this is Roy. I'm here in Arizona.
Oh, there you are. Zoe, are you here too, or did we hang up?
No, I am here, but you're not just in Arizona. You're in, surprise,
Arizona. That's right.
Are you in Surprise, Arizona?
I am.
Lookout Mountain. Okay, cool. That's great. And of course, Zoe is calling from a museum,
the Land of Plenty.
A museum telegraph station. By the sounds of it.
I'm calling from my one of the bank of payphones in Die Hard 2. You may hear some sound in the background.
Okay. No, good to know. I can't remember if there's anything else we have to talk about, but this is a podcast where we pick a movie genre, and it's often a weird genre, and we watch three movies, and two of us really like most of the movies, and one of us craps on it for no reason. And usually it could be any number of there are different histories of one of us and a different one of us, you know, always like disagreeing with the other two. So it makes for some great banter, and also we give out awards to all the movies and we rank the movies, and it's a movie podcast and we talk about movies, and we're the only podcast like it in the whole world where we talk about movies.
In the world.
Yeah.
So we're talking about Manimal movies. John, tell us how we got here. Why are we watching Manimal movies?
We're watching Manimal movies because I think I nominated Manimal movies, or one of you nominated Manimal movies. Like, we should talk about Manimal movies. And and it didn't take, right? And then it happened a bunch more times. And then we're finally like, okay, well, it's lost so many times that let's just talk about Manimal movies. Is that the story?
More or less. So it was this, 50s musicals, and Greek mythology movies all got shot down three times. So we forced those into a poll, and Manimal won.
And we're going to get to it, but one of the movies we're going to talk about is going to be disqualified as a Manimal movie.
Is that the one that's and a woman movie or whatever?
It would be we'll get there. We'll get there.
Okay.
Okay, so the movies that were picked, Zoe over there picked the movie Pinocchio, and then I picked the movie Lady Hawk, which, you know, came a few years later. And in between, on Facebook, you know, some of the listeners of the program, or not listeners, but just people who hang out on Facebook and never listen to anything, they picked The Last Unicorn, which we will get to. And you guys, I think you might be surprised to hear that I hadn't seen two of these three movies before this podcast.
Oh, fascinating. So right before we jump in, I think it's fun just to talk about small local events. So I saw a fantastic tweet on Twitter, right? The caption was, when you come back from the past in your time machine and you immediately realize you screwed something up. And it was a picture of our president in the Lincoln Room in front of his giant banquet table full of Big Macs. And I thought that was pretty good. So in all fairness, our president.
Did you see the tweet of, like, it showed a bunch of clips of Lando Calrissian leading Han Solo and Princess Leia around Cloud City? And then they open the door, and then on the other side of the door is Donald Trump with all the hamburgers.
No, I didn't see that. But there's another
the most brilliant thing I've ever heard.
That's great. There was another one that I loved that was when Batman sets a trap for the Hamburglar. But I looked into it, right? Because so everyone knows what happened. The Clemson Tigers won the NCAA football national championship. They came to the White House. President Trump fed them all what I have to presume is by that time
Wendy's.
Kind of Luke cold Wendy's, Burger King, whatever. So it just looked really bizarre, but I looked into it, and I guess when these championship teams come to the White House, it's usually catered by like Popeyes or Chick-fil-A. So it's usually fast food.
Really?
Yeah. So and I wondered that. I thought, this is so weird. How does it get weirder than this? And I thought, I wonder if this is how it's usually done and people just, you know, no one ever cares to ask. And so yeah, it kind of is. Although I could eat Chick-fil-A cold, but I'm not eating a 1 hour old quarter pounder. But anyway, so it I don't know. It looked so weird. And when it first popped up on Twitter, all I could think was, is this a parody account? And because there's a Trump parody account that looks so much like the real account, and I thought that's what it was, and I thought, oh my gosh, no, this is where we live. We got a grinning ear to ear President Trump feeding a national championship football team about, what is it, like 1,000 Big Macs or something?
Well,
I don't know.
Well, wasn't it like, I actually kind of, I would have liked to have gone to that party. If I went to the White House, I would assume I'd get like some, you know, caviar, some nice food, but, you know, if that's the way it's usually done, then whatever. But, like, seeing, like, all the burgers stacked like that, because didn't he do, like, a stack of McDonald's and a stack of Burger King and a stack of Wendy's?
Yeah.
I think it's like, oh, what a great opportunity to just try all the burgers at the same time, like, get one of
that's
each.
True.
I've never been able to do that, right? Yeah.
So that's cool. And I think the Wendy's chicken wraps, those looked like they probably would have been good. So the other question is, like, do you just, like, call one McDonald's, right, and say, hey, this is the president. I need 500 Big Macs in an hour. I don't know, like, how – or you'd have to, like, call, like, multiple McDonald's and multiple Burger Kings and multiple Wendy's. I don't – because you and I have been in a fast food place where we worked. Yeah. Those girls don't cook 300 burgers at a time.
Yeah.
So – anyway, it was weird. It was funny. It turns out it's not as weird as people think, but it was still funny. Anyway – that's that. So now we can talk about movies.
Interesting that that's been on your mind. That's a big thing on your mind.
That's all I can think about.
Okay. How was your Cafe Rio salad that made us late for recording, but not really?
Oh, it was fine. I think I'd rather have had a burrito. I know you guys like the salad. But it was fine.
No,
I've got some left, and I'll eat the rest later.
I mean, the burrito keeps longer, but the salad, you just get more, so you may as well just keep the salad longer.
There you go.
And
you
healthier.
Just get it later, yeah.
It's not healthier. It's about 900 calories less healthy.
Well, so how I do the salad is I never get the rice, and I never eat the tortilla.
So I feel like I'm obligated to eat the tortilla, and I realize the tortilla is probably like half the calories, right?
It really is. And it's just covered in bean stuff.
Oh, no, it's so good it's covered in that, and it's covered in lime juice, hopefully. Because they give you a lime wedge, and I just dissect that wedge. And I just like
wedges.
I squeeze it so hard, and then I take the little pulpy bits, and I take them out with my fingers, and it's under my fingernails and everything, and I throw the lime in there. I'm like, every last bit of this tiny lime. Like, if it were up to me, they would just give me an entire lime with the salad.
Yes, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
All right.
Cafe Rio. Good stuff. Okay.
Hey, so, Zoe, it's important to tell you that I found right next to the Cafe Rios is a Freddy's frozen custard and steak burgers, and that's that's where tomorrow's
going.
Yeah.
I like Freddy's. Yeah, Freddy's is pretty decent burger.
Yeah.
Their fries are like the shoestring fries, if I remember correctly. It's okay, but their custard's not bad. I mean, it's not like Nielsen's back in Utah or anything, but it's not bad. Okay, one last food question. Surprise close to Gilbert?
Sort of.
Are you by Phoenix?
I'm not sure in which direction Gilbert is, but I think I'm in the vicinity.
Okay, here's what you need to do, and you need to trust me on this one. You need to go to a place called Chompy's.
It's like Paunch Burger.
Yeah, no, Chompy's. It's a Jewish deli.
Okay.
Not even kidding you. They do these things called brisket sliders, and they have brisket, cheese, and latkes, and they put it on a little like on challah bread, and they have three of these sliders. You dip it in a brisket gravy. I'm telling you, it is one of my favorite meals of all time.
You know, I've always wondered that. Like, so they have brisket and cheese on there.
Yes.
I always wondered if Jewish delis had that because, I mean, that's totally not kosher, right?
It's not pork.
Well, yeah, but it's milk and meat in the same meal.
Oh, I don't know. John, I don't even care, okay? So it looks like Chompies is only like 9 miles away from me.
Oh my gosh, swish. You need to go there, and you need to report how amazing it is. I'm telling you, I love it. They've got the pickles are amazing. Like, everything that they do is amazing. Do the brisket sliders.
Hmm. Well, all right then.
All right, you guys, shut up about beef, all right? I'm going crazy over here.
Oh, man. All right.
Okay. Pinocchio?
Pinocchio!
This is our first Manimal movie, and it's a movie called Pinocchio, and it's a movie I had never seen. And let me tell you guys, it is a horror fest. Like, from all angles. Like, what's going on? Like, I don't... Like, this is just a nightmare realm, right? Because you got this old guy, and he wishes for a little boy, and this woman just, you know, out of nowhere... is just like, oh, you know what? I'm just going to create life out of nowhere. And where does this consciousness come from? This little boy just out of the ether just has this personality and this consciousness. And what is that? Like, what does he wake up to? And he wakes up to this horror show where, okay, kids just get kidnapped in the street on their way to school, like not once but twice by the same kidnappers. Like, this happens like multiple times.
Yeah, Geppetto is really ignorant of life on the streets. He's he's not. Yeah.
Also, I kind of get the sense that he bit off more than he could chew with like wishing for a son, because 5 minutes after like finding out he has a son, he's just like, "Oh, I'm sending you off to school." You know, he's just like, "Get out of here." He's just stressed out. He just can't
he couldn't wait for school to start.
He gets sold into like a puppet show. And it's kind of obvious that he didn't practice with the puppets, because when the other puppets are singing along, he's like jumping into the and I mean, who scheduled this show with Pinocchio, right? they like start off with the puppet who can dance with no strings because he's a living boy made out of wood, and he introduces the entire show, you know? Like, they don't save him for the end. You'd think he would be the big attraction, but they show him off, and then when the rest of the puppets come out, like, Pinocchio obviously didn't rehearse with them, and he's just like, oh, wow, look at all these other puppets, and he gets in the way of the other puppets. Like, he didn't know that they existed or were there or anything.
Mm.
Anyway, he's quite a showman. He's a really good kid. Oh, and I should mention that he's been given a conscience in the form of a cricket. Like, this freaky blue fairy... is like, okay, I'm going to just blatantly create life and just toy with life in this world. And his sense of right and wrong is like just completely through this insect who peers at every single lady he sees, by the way.
Oh, this is the horniest cartoon character ever.
Yeah, yeah. Also, I do want to point out really quick that if this movie were released today, it would receive an R rating for tobacco smoking. For sure.
Oh, so it's interesting your thought about how weird it is for this puppet to become a real boy, but he's wood, right? And I think it's why every like live action attempt at Pinocchio is just so creepy, yeah. Right? Because it's fine for it to be a cartoon, but to actually picture like this animated wooden thing moving around, it's just disturbing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, honestly, I love that it would be R-rated for the tobacco smoking and drinking, and not the child trafficking.
Yeah.
Like the Genesis Project, whatever the heck. This would be that's why I got on Twitter, and I'm like, this is child trafficking fun for the whole family. Honestly, you're watching this, and you're like, oh, yeah, no, kidnapping kids. I forgot how good of a storyline that was.
Yeah, no, this is – but you guys do agree. This is a horror show. This is scarier than most of the movies that we saw for Halloween.
Yeah, honestly, it really is.
Yeah. Anyway, Pinocchio's next plight, right, is he gets kidnapped again and sent off to Pleasure Island, where the kids can smoke and play pool and do all that they want. But the unfortunate side effect, and I guess the movie doesn't really explain it, because, I mean, this is a fairy tale, after all, and so it doesn't really have to explain these kind of things, but there's some kind of gas... or some kind of virus on the island that turns all the boys into jackasses. It's jackass gas, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so despite being made out of wood, he's still – I mean, it is kind of interesting. Perhaps Pinocchio was a little bit thankful, because he has the ears and tail of a donkey. which were like more like organic, at least in an animal way, than his wooden limbs. And so, in a way, his becoming a donkey is a little bit closer to becoming a real boy.
Yeah.
In that sense. But I didn't really understand, like, why... I mean, I guess we don't know why they turned... like, what properties of the island made them turn into donkeys. But, like, what was the reason for that? Were they going to be... like, were they going to be put on a ship where the ship... the ship's... like engine is powered by donkeys, like, and they threw them in a donkey furnace, or were they just going to be pulling stuff?
That's what I assume. They're just thrown into a furnace and they provide steam.
Yeah.
No, I assume that they're being sold for labor, right? Like they're like mm-hmm. it's like a free source of it's like donkeys for free, and then you sell them for labor. I don't know, but I like your idea better. I think they're just being used for fuel for a boat.
So anyway, that happens. Pinocchio's just wise enough, with very little help from Jiminy Cricket, but I think he just has enough of a self-awareness and a conscience. He's able to get away. A lot of the other boys, their fate is sealed, such as Lampwick, who's great. But again, Pinocchio overcomes that. His third trial, though, this is the biggie, though, right? He gets home, and there's a note from the Blue Fairy, who's insane. What is up with her? I don't get it. But she writes a note saying, oh, by the way, while you were gone, Geppetto went out looking for you, and he was looking so hard he wound up in the middle of a whale. And so Pinocchio goes, and he goes into the belly of the whale.
Where was Geppetto looking that he ended up inside Monstro?
I think, I mean, like, his idea was, okay, well, I'm going to check the sea first, because at least Pinocchio will be floating, because he's made of wood. So, Pinocchio goes into the whale, he finds Geppetto, and with his cat and his fish, still miraculously in a fishbowl in the middle of a whale.
Yeah.
And Jiminy, they light a fire in the whale. The whale sneezes them out, but gets really pissed and tries to swallow them again. In the end, Pinocchio is face down in a puddle. And Roy, you on Facebook, you posed an interesting question, and I don't know if I have the answer to this, but so Pinocchio is dead, right? He's dead. But how did Pinocchio die?
Okay, because he became part donkey. There's now like a. There is some living tissue attached to Pinocchio, and maybe that that opens the door for mortality. That's the only thing I can think of, because honestly, otherwise, he's just a wooden puppet.
So, like, maybe like he got too, like his ears got too full of water.
Yeah, we don't see it because it's inside him, but he's got donkey lungs.
Okay, yeah. Well, you need donkey lungs in order to make a donkey sound.
That's true.
Okay. And so it was the donkey lungs. It made it was like just the wrong part of him got wet. Pinocchio died, but ultimately, really, I think the message is. And I'm trying to figure out. I'm trying to remember what did the Blue Fairy say that he needed to do? Like a real boy needs to be. It's like there were three things. It was like brave. Oh gosh, dang it! I didn't write it down.
Which I'll try and find it if you'd like.
Oh, no, here it is. Here it is. A real boy has to be brave, truthful, and unselfish. And so finally Pinocchio, by the way, the big thing that Pinocchio is famous for lying, that's just like, what, like 20 seconds of the whole movie that Pinocchio's nose grows when he lies. I do kind of like it how when his nose grows, like branches also grow on it. And also... spontaneous generation of birds, like the life horror in this movie. Like, where did those birds come from? Did they just do they cease from existing when Pinocchio tells the truth? Like, is their whole existence just like, oh wow, Pinocchio lied, and so now I'm here and I'm going to live and I'm going to enjoy? Oh no, I'm dead again. I don't exist anymore. So freaky. Anyway, but obviously Pinocchio is a true hero. He saved his father. It's kind of great because his father, you know, was able to, you know, be a father to him. And then cycle of life, he goes and saves his parent, and you know they look out for each other, so that's great.
Yeah.
And as a reward, he becomes a real human boy. And I'm sure the rest of his life is dull and boring, and he deserves that because, you know, what a crazy first, like, 3 days of his life.
Yeah, how many days was that, actually? Because it was, you have the day where he was created, the next day he went to school, Stromboli's. We know that he was overnight. So
and
that's,
he never
that,
went to one day
days.
Of school, did he?
Yeah, the next day after Stromboli's, he goes to, what do you call it, Pleasure Island. So I think this was like maybe 4 days total, I guess five if you count the day that he was turned back into a real boy. So I'm assuming at the end that Jimmy finally gets lucky with one of the clocks.
Yeah, yeah.
So good for him.
Yeah, good. He made it with a clock. Good for him.
Yeah, so honestly, though, I can't picture a live-action version of Pinocchio that, like, is endearing and sweet and able to show to your children.
Right, and like seeing it now as like this 40-something person, I'm just horrified by just the prospect of this is like, yeah, and you can see why AI took so much from Pinocchio.
Yeah,
I think like now, one thing that we've never really tapped into, and something that's always kind of be in the future, especially ever since Frankenstein was written, is like the possibility of life outside of us, like unnatural life. Could something such as life, which is simple, it's just like what we're all based on, but it's contained within our carbon elements and our phylum and the animal kingdom and the plant kingdom and what has been life, you know, naturally here on Earth, but to actually artificially create life, what would that mean, and what would life do, and how would they feel, and, you know, what's up with them? Like, that's always just, I'm always gonna just suddenly be like, oh, this is scary. So even though this is just a fun little fairy tale, you know, now I'm wondering, like, okay, Pinocchio, he had this crazy 3 days, now what happens next? Is he going to malfunction and kill everybody? Or what? Because, you know, so the first instinct of life is to murder.
We know his conscience sucks, so.
Yeah, he doesn't have a good conscience.
Well, actually, as I watched Pinocchio this time, I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting, because it's like 3 days, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you get, like, the very beginning where he's granted life.
Yeah.
Or the, you know, given the spark of life by the weird blue fairy. Is there, like, an allegory to Pinocchio? So I was doing some reading about it, and it was like there was a ton of symbology from, Freemasons in Pinocchio.
Okay.
And one of the things that they talked about is, I guess there's an occult translation of the Jonah and the whale, and that's kind of representative of Pinocchio and the whale. But kind of how it related to Pinocchio, the story, one of the things I was reading is that at the very end, Pinocchio goes through this hardship where he's tempted, right, by he's tempted by the material or secular man in Pleasure Island and gets swallowed by a whale. So it's like the death of his wooden mortality. And he arises from that tomb, which is represented by the whale, 3 days later, resurrected as a little boy.
Yeah, but where's his beard?
Okay. So anyway, Pinocchio was made in 1940, which makes it the follow-up to...
Don't just show anyway my deep explanation of Pinocchio.
No, I loved it. I loved it. I'm serious. I'm serious. I love it.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So you're right, and it was beautiful. But the most important part of this is that it made the budget was $2.5 million, and it made $84 million. I don't know what $84 million in 1940 equals to now, but that means that Pinocchio was extremely successful.
You could have bought a country with $84 million.
Yeah. Also, the idea that it cost $2.6 million to make, that seems
kind of... In 1940. Like, yeah. We you know, so... So essentially in 1940, you think about it and you're like, okay, well, what's that's pre-World War II, and post-World War II is where we saw kind of that it was America at its strength, right? So 1940, we're still suffering from the Great Depression, $84 million.
Yeah, you take into account the population size and how much movies cost back then, and you got to think that, like, I mean, that's almost like every single American seeing this movie at least once at the theater.
$1.5 billion translated today using an inflationary rate of 3.75%.
Oh.
So
that's up
anyway,
there. That's
there you go.
That's Avatar money. Yeah.
To be honest, I mean, it's beautifully animated, especially for 1940. It gets, I don't know if you want to say it gets lazy, but when it like shows a bunch of children in the background, then all of a sudden it kind of looks like silly symphony animation again, right?
It looks like the clones and Clone Wars a little bit.
They just use
a computer for that.
Yeah. I mean, for the most part, though, it's really lovely animation.
Well, so the animation is, I mean, we'll get to it a little bit more. I know, I learned something on the 80s All Over podcast where they talk about this. They talk about a lot of 80s cartoons. We're going to talk about an 80s cartoon in a minute. But you can kind of tell with Pinocchio that they actually animated 24 frames out of the second.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
What do they call it? They call it like what is the?
It's on the ones. Is the term
on the ones? Yeah,
on the ones.
Yep, exactly.
So every single frame is done. Like if someone does it on the twos or on the fours, it's just every fourth frame they animate. And so that's why some of the cost cutting animation it like looks so jerky is because it's just there just aren't as many pictures there.
Yeah.
But in Pinocchio, it's like, oh man, the pictures are there. They're all there.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at the equivalency as well on the cost of it, it roughly costs $45 million to make.
That's crazy. That seems like so much money for just a traditionally animated film.
Right? But you know, to John's point, like the animation in it is beautiful.
Yeah.
The same, it's one of the you know, kind of very similar. Obviously, it's in that same era. A few years later, Dumbo, which looks amazing as well. So. It's just kind of a testament to Disney that these animated features hold up like they do, and it's something that you can show your kids.
Yeah.
Even though there's child trafficking, you can show your kids.
we'll talk about a little later, but like one of my very, very favorites is Sleeping Beauty, right? And I think you have like the foreground animation, which is fine in Sleeping Beauty, but like the backgrounds in Sleeping Beauty, like every scene is like a piece of art. So Disney knows what they're doing. I guess they've been around this track.
Now, was Pinocchio? Was it the second or the third one?
Man, now you're gonna make me.
I know Fantasia was. I don't know. Maybe considered the second one, but
I think Fantasia was after. Okay, Fantasia is also 1940. So I guess it just depends on. I'm going to good old Wikipedia because I got to settle this.
Yeah, I'm curious.
But anyway, they were both animated in the same year. Which this and Fantasia to be done in the same year—that's a whole lot for a small animation studio to be.
I didn't know how much Fantasia was, but if it's similar cost, $90 million to do two movies.
Yeah. Wow. Paid off.
Yeah. Let's see.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, here it is.
But, Pinocchio was in February. Fantasia was in November.
Okay, very good. And then The Reluctant Dragon was in June 1941. I've never heard of that. Must have been a short.
The super famous Reluctant Dragon.
Yeah, we should watch The Reluctant Dragon for this this podcast. But that's pretty amazing. So Snow White comes out in 1937. I thought it was 1939. Okay. Snow White comes out in 1937, and then Pinocchio comes out. And Fantasia comes out in 1940. How's that for the first three animated movies of a studio?
Yeah.
Snow White, Pinocchio, Fantasia. Boy, yeah. I don't know if that could ever be matched. And
that's
then just
cool.
A few years later is The Three Caballeros.
I love The Three Caballeros.
Oh, and then six years later is Song of the South.
Ah, that's a real high point.
Yeah.
Because I don't know that the Disney they loved doing like the live action cartoon mixtures, didn't they? With like Fantasia and the Three Caballeros.
Then of course in 1943, Victory Through Air Power.
So I'm reminded in Fantasia, I want to say that there's like in The Night on Bald Mountain that there's like some brief nudity, like some sweet brief female nudity in Fantasia, because we were watching it for Halloween and one of my kids like, Dad. So, well, demons are naked, okay?
Yeah.
Oh, there.
Don't go to hell. Too many naked people there.
All righty. Well, you got anything else you guys want to talk about with Pinocchio?
It's horrifying.
Nope. It really is terrifying. Like, yeah. I was watching it, and I'm just like, maybe this isn't a kid's movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're going to get abducted, and you're going to be thrown into a creepy carnival with other terrible kids and turned into donkeys and used as fuel to power steamboats.
So John, when you and I first started doing this podcast, and it was still Star Trek, right?
Yeah.
So we probably came up with like 10 or 15 categories. I don't know if, I want to say Manimal was one of the originals. I don't know. But I think when we thought of Manimal, we were thinking of Lady Hawk, right? Because
yeah.
It became so obvious that when it was picked, like, oh my gosh, what movies fit this?
Yeah.
No movies fit this. It's Lady Hawk, and then we're going to have to make some crap up.
Yeah.
But
no, I'm glad. Pinocchio's it's an obvious one. I'm glad I watched it finally.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we got the last unicorn. Roy, it's up to you to salvage the journey of the last unicorn.
So okay, you're right. No, I thought Lady Hawk was first, but you're right. It's the last unicorn.
What was that? 84?
82.
What was Last Unicorn?
Last 82. Unicorn was 82. It only made $6.5 million at the theater. So I know for a fact that one of our original categories was Quest movies, and so I've been trying to get us to watch The Last Unicorn since we started. Okay. So I'll sum it up briefly.
I have something to say about Schmendrick when we get there, and I'm going to say it because let's get there.
Alan Arkin. Oh.
Yeah. So anyway, The Last Unicorn. You've got a unicorn who discovers from hearing some hunters in her forest that she's the last. She doesn't really buy
it. Butterfly.
So she talks to the butterfly, right?
I don't know how that butterfly knew everything.
That butterfly, man. Butterflies are what butterflies are. So anyway, let's see. I had my notes up for Lady Hawk for some reason, so let me pull up Last Unicorn. All right, The Last Unicorn, as you well know, so it's animated by the folks who did Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, but they also did The Hobbit. Rankin Bass, and then the soundtrack done by America. Sweet, sweet America.
Everyone who worked on this movie was doing all the drugs as far as, like, hallucinogenic and, hallucinogenic. Like, honestly, like, especially with the butterfly. Who is this butterfly, and why is he the freaking gatekeeper?
And why does he have, like, flight goggles, right?
Right.
So there's some weird stuff in this movie. It's like, that doesn't fit into the time period at all. When they go to the camp and Captain Cully says, would you like a taco?
Yeah.
So she confronts the butterfly and says, hey, do you know who I am? And the butterfly, you know, does his thing. He finally says, your name is a golden bell hung in my heart. I would break my body to pieces to call you once by your name. And then what does he call her? Like Mabel or something? But he finally calls her Unicorn. And he's the one that says, hey, if you want to go find the unicorns, you got to go find the Red Bull. And King Hagrid's castle, the Red Bull. So the unicorn's off on her journey. And the unicorn is Mia Farrow. Right, so we got some seriously famous voice actors here. She is
impersonating David Bowie, I think. She's like, oh, butterfly. What? What a groovy time that we're having in the... It's like, she kind of sounds like David Bowie to me. I don't know.
All right, so she leaves the forest. She immediately gets captured by Mommy Fortuna, played by Angela Lansbury, who I think in 1982 she was probably only like 85 years old at that point.
At that point in time.
So she's like would you call her a witch? I don't know. She's got this weird carnival of animals, and she's cast spells on these animals so people will think they're seeing things they're not, to the extent that she has to cast a spell on the unicorn – and people see a fake horn, because if they couldn't see a fake horn, they wouldn't recognize her for what she is. But you have Schmendrick the Magician, who is voiced by Alan Arkin, and he does know who she is.
I love the magic in this universe is like there's magic everywhere. It's all around us. It exists everywhere, but none of you can see it. It's yeah. So it kind of
honestly
may as well not exist.
When you set up like that is totally the Bill Nye song from Love Actually. Magic all around us.
Yes.
So, now here's the thing. As I'm watching Schmendrick, it totally hit me. He's not Schmendrick the magician. Schmendrick the Goldblum. This guy is like Jeff Goldblum.
He is.
But like Schmendrick the magician. As I'm watching that, I'm like, oh my gosh, Goldblum. That's all I could think about anytime he was on screen.
Well, you did realize who the voice is.
Yeah, it's Jeff Bridges.
It's not Schmendrick.
It's Alan Arkin.
Yeah. That's right.
You can kind of see, like, Alan Arkin could be Goldblum if he wanted to, yeah?
So, there's a few things I want to talk about with this movie, and one is we got to talk about the ideas of immortality and mortality, right? Because she's immortal. She's a unicorn. She's immortal. We got to talk about the seriously weird nudity that is in this film.
Kitty.
Yeah, several times weird nudity, and then also I want to talk about why certain people can see her for what she is, and why people can't. But anyway, so she, with Schmendrick's help, she leaves this carnival. She frees the other animals, including a harpy, which has like these three large human boobs sticking out from underneath its feathers, right? So that there's your weird nudity number one. And
it's like related to the woman in Total Recall is like.
Pretty much. So they escape, but they get captured by a bunch of brigands. The brigands turn them over to Captain Coley. In Captain Coley's band, we meet Molly Crew, and this is when Schmendrick's magic works for the first time, and it's the weirdest magic in the whole world. He just says, "Do what you will," which is awful because you have no idea what's going to happen. But it always, I guess, kind of works out.
It's pretty much like the equivalent. Is if a scientist just like grabs some beakers and just threw them at somebody?
Science.
Yeah, science. More or less. So they escape except for Schmendrick is captured again.
I didn't get why Molly just like left her husband. Like, what was in it for her?
Is that her husband? I don't know.
It was her husband.
She was tired of making
because the unicorn.
She was tired of making sweat and rat stew, I guess, right?
Yeah, but, sweat stew.
But they tie Schmendrick up to a tree, and this is so weird.
This is weird.
The tree becomes animated, and it's like this 70-year-old woman.
Roseanne Barr.
Yeah, with like just enormous boobs. Like it's just this a tree that has giant boobs, and Schmendrick is just stuck right between them. And again, this brings up kind of – because all I could think was like Pinocchio, right? Like – it's wood, but it's animated, so would he, like, be getting splinters? Would it hurt? I don't know, right? Or would he be suffocating? I don't know. And then, like, when the tree gets turned back into a tree, if his face is stuck in there in the cleavage, then he's in real trouble.
It was probably donkey bosoms.
Bosoms.
Yeah.
It's donkey bosoms. Yeah. Okay. So, like the ones Pinocchio had underneath his yes. alpine outfit, right? Okay. So,
his alpine outfit.
His alpine outfit. So the unicorn saves them from that, and they're on their way, except Molly Crew stops them. She recognizes that the unicorn is a unicorn. She's pretty upset because she's been waiting to see a unicorn her whole life, and she finally does, and she's not – a young person she once was, right? So I don't know, but they go on and they head to King Hagrid's castle. They get there, the Red Bull is there. She, as the unicorn, is about to be defeated by the Red Bull. Schmendrick does his magic, do as you will, and now she's a woman. So is this disqualified, John, because she started as an animal, now she's a woman?
Animals are men that turn into animals, not unicorns that turn into men. So she would be an animan.
An animan?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So if you say so. So she's a woman, and I guess this is your third instance of nudity, although this is the most modest nudity of the whole film. As a woman, she's naked, but she has hair down to her toes, and it covers all of her bits. So But she's really, really upset because she says that she can feel the body dying. She's been immortal this whole time.
That's now the thing. She's yeah, and, like unicorns. Okay, the way the movie sets up, right, is okay. She's immortal. She lives forever because she's a unicorn. But the trade-off is that she also can't leave her forest. But she also provides the idea is she provides magic to the forest. Like the forest doesn't come unto harm because there's like the symbiotic relationship that the immortality of the unicorn provides a protection to the forest. But if she leaves the forest, then anything goes, right? Is that the thing?
Yeah, and I don't think she doesn't lose her immortality by leaving the forest, but she's no longer protected. Like, she's now vulnerable.
Yes,
But now as a human, she's like crushingly mortal. And all I can think of is like, okay, like, what if you were like, what if all the ailments in your body could just be healed and you were just all of a sudden in prime condition right now and you got to feel that and you got to experience that and then all of a sudden everything you had before just came back really quickly, right? You'd probably like feel it. So whatever. So that's how she is. They go into King Haggard's castle. King Haggard realizes that she's the unicorn, and we get that later. She falls in love with Prince Lear, Jeff Bridges, and by the way, King Haggard is Christopher Lee.
Yes.
Which is awesome.
His voice, man. His voice is so great. So Prince Lear tries to win her heart by killing a dragon. It's my favorite. One of my favorite parts of the movie is like, hey, I brought you this decapitated dragon head. Don't you like it? And so she starts to fall in love with him. She's kind of losing her identity, and she's kind of forgetting who she is. They finally figure out how to get to the Red Bull.
One of the best parts of the movie is that.
Yeah, you got Odo skeleton, right, from Deep Space Nine.
Deep Space Nine Odo, yeah.
Rene Auberjonois. Yeah. So, in fact, this is pre-Deep Space Nine, so good for him. So they find their way into the lair of the Red Bull. She gets transformed back into a unicorn so that she can fight the bull, but she's losing, and Prince Lear sacrifices his life to save her. And then she sees this, and she drives the Red Bull back into the sea. All the unicorns are released. King Haggard's castle comes crashing to the ground. She's going to return to her forest. I think Molly Gru and Schmendrick end up getting married. I don't know. They at least leave together. He becomes a full wizard. And so here's the interesting part, because we just this real quick conversation on immortality, that mortality is a vital part of her journey, right? She doesn't defeat the Red Bull if she does not spend time as a human, because I don't think it would have affected her to see Prince Lear's death if she hadn't. But she did have that human experience.
How many Christ allegories are we going to come up with?
That and humanity 75. Is like the through line on all of this. Like
75, right?
What is the definition of man's mortality and humanity and Jesus? That's the through line on all of this.
Yes.
Anyway, so she now she's a unicorn again, but she's going to be different from any other unicorn ever because she's felt regret, she's felt love. But again, I don't think she defeats the Red Bull if she hadn't had that human experience. So there's that.
She lost her innocence, but she was able to be resurrected in a pure, more godlike way.
Sure. Right. So, I mean, that's the last unicorn. Man, I love the music. And sometimes the foreground animation isn't great. I don't know how many frames per second we're talking here for animating. But the background, some of the backgrounds are just beautiful. It's just really well painted. And then the last thing is you have some characters who can see the unicorn and some who can't. So what's the difference? Why can some people see her as a unicorn? True believer.
I mean, because the villain, right? Yeah. Well, the villain is like he did have a recognition of what was magic, right? In fact, all the villains, it's like all the extremes, right? The evil witch, she recognized the magic, and Haggard, he recognized the magic. Lear, like the hero, the Jeff Bridges hero, the prince, and everything, he did not, right?
Yeah.
One of the things that they had to overcome is all these villains, they wanted to, their whole idea of seeing magic is to contain the magic, to cage the magic, to hold it for themselves. Like somehow the repression of what makes something special is what gives them joy or pleasure somehow, which I think is kind of interesting.
Keeping it and not sharing it, right?
Like, right, right, yeah.
It has to be theirs. Yeah, so fascinating. Anyway,
it's not
so
fascinating. This movie is not good. If maybe if it was a different vehicle, it would be. It's the unicorn, and it's just, I was watching it like, I want the worst witch. At least that's got Tim Curry.
Well, I think it's awesome that you're really wrong. But so there's a couple cool things. Hagrid's Fortress looks just like Castlevania.
It does look like Castlevania.
It looks just like Castlevania.
That's a good point.
And then the Red Bull, the Chicago Bulls mascot and the Red Bull, they're identical.
That's funny.
And we do have to, is Red Bull the drink? Is it, did they take it from this? Because that seemed like a powerful bull that had a lot of energy.
Yes.
Thank you.
There he is. So, but every now and then, though, like listening to Schmendrick talk, I can kind of just hear like little bits of Rote Jr. from a... No, Rote from Wait Until Dark.
Dark, okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh, that's so great.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's the last unicorn.
That's the last unicorn. Let me tell you one reason why I liked it. And then if Zoe wants to go off, he can.
Is it because of the – did you like it because of the mammo cannons on the harpy?
Yes. Mammal cannons.
Oh, mammal cannons.
Mammal cannons.
Like mammary cannons.
Mammary cannons.
Yes, actually, I'm changing. Okay, I was going to talk about something else, but I'll talk about those for 5 minutes now.
Mammal
flash. No, I won't do that. Actually, personally, I'm a big fan of America. Not the country, of course, the group, but the. I actually didn't really appreciate the American music, and I think the music was actually composed by someone else, but they just kind of lent their voice and instrument talents to the. I can't be sure, but I can say like this is no, the songs in this is they're no Ventura Highway. Let's just say that. and also, Jeff Bridges, Mia Farrow, don't like their singing. I'll say that too.
So I don't really care. Jeff Bridges sounds awful.
Yeah. He sounds like there was a Simpsons episode where Principal Skinner, like on a snow day and they're all trapped in the school, he shows them a DVD. And it was the Christmas that almost wasn't, but then was maybe or something. And there's they show a scene of just this guy, and it looks like kind of like a Santa Claus Conquers the Martians kind of thing, where he's just like singing to this big giant toy doll that like became human or something. And it's like, when I'm thinking of you, and Milhouse, it cuts to Milhouse. He's been singing for 3 hours. But yeah. Okay, no, here's what I like, though, because it is obvious. I think, you know, they're playing a little bit with gender here, with the whole, hero's quest and all that, and it's very straightforward. She wakes up. She's a unicorn. She realizes she might be the last of her kind, so she needs to go on a quest to save her kind, and it's very straightforward, but it kind of gets a little shady, being as she becomes a beautiful woman. And so it kind of inserts the whole, like, okay, what do we value for women in these kind of fairy tales, where she's just kind of inserted into that situation where it's like, oh, I've met love. I've met this man. I've met the hero. I need to be loved and be submissive and love. And so I think the whole idea of her being injected into that, you know, it's first of all, it's talking a little bit about, I guess a harsh way to say it is a double standard between men and women when it comes to heroics. But also the whole, just in real life, you know, what often, you know, women face is like, am I going to go out there and am I going to be a hero, or am I going to, you know, step back because, you know, it is a man's world, and, you know, I'm going to just in the sacrifices that come with love and all of that kind of stuff. And so, weirdly, it is straightforward. She, like, has a quest to fulfill, but she's sidelined by the feminine quest that kind of intersects with her quest, and I kind of like that.
Well, there you go.
Okay. All right, Zoe, what else? What else? Go ahead. Let it have it. It made $3 million, so, you know, it's beaten and it's broken. Do your worst.
Did it make $3 million? I don't know what the budget was.
I don't know.
Was.
I thought you said it made $2 million, $2 or $3 million, whatever.
It made 6.5, but I don't know what the budget was, so I don't know if it cleared its budget.
Oh man, yeah. Its budget was like $7 million. Oh wait, but it was pesos. It says here pesos.
I mean, I guess for me, this is just like it's one of those. It's weird, mm-hmm. right? It's a weird animation. Which there was a lot of weird animated movies from the '70s and eighties that this kind of fits in. It's a less interesting. Like I watch it and I'm like, yeah, like it's weird, but it's not as like weird or as interesting as something like Wizards. Or Fire and Ice that Ralph Bakshi did. So, for me, I was watching this and I'm just like, yeah, whatever. I don't get the nostalgia around it. I didn't watch this as a kid. So, I didn't come to Last Unicorn, and so I didn't see it maybe, I don't know, maybe 10 or 15 years ago as an adult. So, I don't have the nostalgia for it. And I watch it and I'm like, this isn't really a movie I care that my kids see. Like, it's just, I'll tell you this.
JR, you'll disagree with me. But this is the other movie that I hadn't seen. And I know I've watched
it. Oh, I disagree with you. No, right, why do I disagree with you?
Well, because we watched it in college a lot. we watched it in college, and I remember watching this. I watched this with Jamie and Craig and a bunch of people up here. And Zoe, maybe you were there. But I remember we were like joking about the taco line and everything. I know I've seen this movie like a couple times, but I think both times I was like off doing something else. Like I didn't follow what happened both times.
Yeah.
This is the first time I've actually seen it. And I would say like I didn't have nostalgia with it. Like I never really grasped onto it until now. I would say that's a positive thing.
So every time I watch a movie like this, right, where I have like really fond memories of it as a kid, I always worry like is nostalgia painting my perception of it? And I don't think so. I just genuinely enjoy almost every minute of this film. But it's hard to say. You never know.
Yeah, I just don't get that. I look at it and I'm like, yeah, this is all nostalgia speaking. But
Fire and Ice, I mean, that one was really hard to get into. I think The Last Unicorn, I think there's a reason Christopher Lee wanted to do it so bad, because he saw something in theme and story. And yeah, like it was maybe it was animated on the fours or whatever, and yeah, maybe the music is weird. But I think it is saying something more than most other cartoons of this time were.
So I made a note of it, and I mean, he was interviewed, and he was told, and he said, this is his Desert Island book, right? And you would think maybe Lord of the Rings or whatever, because he reads Lord of the Rings every single year, or at least he did before he died. But this is his favorite book of all time. And if you read the book, I mean, it's basically the screenplay basically comes straight from the book. Because the author wrote the screenplay and he started to try to be creative, and the producers were like, your book's fine.
Stick with the book.
Yeah.
Whoa, egghead. You know.
So anyway.
Okay.
I guess I like the
Bakshi that are kind of in the same kind of realm as this. You know, he did like the Lord of the Rings, and Wizards is just crazy, but I kind of appreciate the more bonkers nature of those. And this one is just kind of like, for me, an uninteresting.
So I'm happy to disagree, and I keep waiting for the movie that you love that I just can't stand, and it hasn't happened yet because typically you have pretty decent taste in film, Mr. Matthew. But we'll get there. We'll get there.
Oh, I can't wait to just humiliate you. And there's going to be tears.
Bring your best. Shot. Hit me with your best shot. Okay, I'm done.
Are you guys ready to talk about the hottest?
Let's do it.
Perhaps the next movie.
The Manimal movie ever.
But here's the best part about this. This is absolutely, like, I love that the title of this is literally what it is. Lady Hawk.
Why is there an E? Why is there an E?
Because she wants to be all cool. Like, oh, British. I'm British.
It's British. Right, exactly. You get it. Like, okay.
Lady Hawkies.
Like, why are you spelling the word theater all wrong? Because you're British. Okay.
No, I'm glad you brought this up initially, because I don't get this title. Like, what does one half of this, why is that the title of the movie?
It should be Wolfman Lady Hawk.
Yeah.
Wolfman Lady Hawk.
Should it just be funny. Okay? But seriously, okay, it just should be called Wolf Hawk with an E.
Oh, there. That's the summary of the movie. Wolfman Lady Hawk. Here's. Did you want to give the facts on this, Roy? Did you get these pulled up? The facts that you have.
Zippity zoppity. 1985. It cost 20 million. It got 18. Wow. This lost 2 million.
Womp womp.
20 million. Yeah. Gosh. Okay. No. I can kind of see that. Because in your Facebook comments, Roy, you said this seems like it was filmed like in the backyard, and I guess it was kind of. But I mean, there were like tons of castles. Like, those are real castles and everything. That can't be
well.
Cheap.
Robin and Marion showed some castles too, and that was an awful film. But I don't know. 20 million. You got to wonder how much goes towards Rutger Hauer and
how much goes to synths.
Synths. They had to buy so many synths. This is probably before Michelle Pfeiffer was really huge, so maybe she didn't cost too much.
Like, she's gorgeous in this. Like, let's just say that. So
she's still gorgeous.
Here's my summary of this movie. Matthew Broderick tries a British accent for 3 minutes, and then it goes wrong. And he continues talking like Bueller. Rutger Hauer, Michelle Pfeiffer, always together, eternally apart.
Oh.
So I mean, you know, this is kind of this feels like a. I hear 20 million, and I'm like, that actually sounds fairly reasonable, especially considering like how this movie looked, and I think the overall quality of it. Yes, it's the sword and sandal quest, that kind of thing. But I feel like it's a lot higher. Production quality. I mean, it really is a quality movie. Like, I watch it and I don't think, oh my gosh, it's so dated. If anything, I'm distracted eternally by how handsome Rutger Hauer is and how much I really want him to be a replicant in all movies.
He is handsome, and it's got fantastic opening credits. And I just pulled this up. $19 million went towards Alfred Molina because he's a big deal.
You're right. But then you brought him up. So, the quick summation of this, because I think most people in our generation love this movie, have seen it muchos times. And,
it's not like the Goonies, though, right? It's not like people own it. And catch it on TV and talk about it a lot. Slightly forgotten. I mean, I have fond memories of it, but it's not like one of those. Yeah, it's not like one of those that like makes the list in BuzzFeed. You know.
See, you say that, and I'm just kind of like, I mean, it's Lady Hawk. Like, who doesn't watch Lady Hawk once a year, or you know, possibly like
once a year?
No, like honestly, I hear this movie and I'm like, yeah, it's Lady Hawk. Like. Huh. I guess because I see it constantly, and Jen and I both love it. We both love, I love, you know, the cast in it. I think it's great. But and I think Navarre is one of my favorite like 80s characters. Like, I watch him and he's like, I saw a review and it said enigmatic. That's perfect because he's kind of like this man in black, right? This man of mystery.
He punches swords out of people's hands. Like, if he doesn't have a sword.
That's the best. So can that whole fight. That first fight is just so brilliant. So for me, I guess Lady Hawk for me is more like front of mind because it's a movie I really like. And, I watch it enough to where, everyone watches this movie a lot. That's not true. The Broderick is the mouse. I don't know. Is this movie in France? I guess I haven't paid close attention because they all have like French names.
They all have, I assumed it's in France. I don't know if I meant to look it up. I don't know if Aquila is a real place or not. By the way, according to IMDb, the events of this, I think they name a specific year, like 1386 or something, because there was an eclipse that year, and it was just right after the plague. And so it makes like a specific sense. But
okay.
I'm checking that out, actually.
You know, so essentially we follow the mouse, we follow Broderick's character. He escapes from prison in an interesting way. His cellmate, you know, in his own words, is a murderer. And when the bishop finds out like that he has escaped, you know, there's no way that he can escape through this. We've seen him kind of crawl through this little like small hole. He gets away. He sends his men after him, and they, Broderick is kind of being boastful. The mouse, or Philippe, or whatever you want to call him, is being kind of boastful in this village, wants to buy everybody a drink because he's just stolen coins from a guard, I guess, a guard in the service of this evil bishop.
Yeah. And how lazy were the guards that were just hanging out there?
They were so lazy. They're sitting there, and, you know, I mean, the guy takes your knife and your coins. You don't deserve them.
But also, like, when he's bragging, like, and they're like, oh, no, we're looking for you, and they all, like, reveal themselves. Like, they're not actually, like, tracking him down. They're just sitting there eating.
They're sitting there eating, yeah. And there's three of them. By the time the fight is done, there's, like, 40 guys. Like, there's literally, like, three of them, and then they, like, uncloak the hoods in this – they uncloak themselves in this dramatic fashion, like – It was me all along. Okay, like, you're just eating at this tavern or this inn? Okay, so, you know, we see this kind of back and forth. He's trying to make his escape. It's early 80s parkour. Yes. And then we see this bolt hit this car, and you're like, oh, what is this? And we turn, and there is Navarre, or Rutger Hauer, in all his blonde gorgeousness.
Medieval Batman.
He's dressed in full black. He's so good. So there he is. So, you know, they in what I don't know how they like this may be one of the parts of the movie that you're just like, okay, this part is not aged well, and it's that whole first fight. And again, it's just like slow sword swings. Oh, he's punching him away. It's nothing. So anyway, he rescues Philippe, his character. They come across this weird. I don't know, this weird, like, sub-village or this, I don't know, it's like this weird kind of shanty town in the forest. It definitely feels like it's pulled parts of Robin Hood. As I'm watching this, it kind of feels like they were taking some elements of Robin Hood. But they come across this, like, little, like, band of people, and that's kind of where we see Philippe, this mysterious guy, or, I'm sorry, Navarre. We see him, and he's being, you know, he's kind of mysterious. His horse is black. Everything he has is black. He's got these, like, these weapons that are interesting, and he's got this hawk that's with him. And then, you know, we see at nighttime, we kind of see Navarre's, like, nowhere to be heard. And then we see Michelle Pfeiffer. She makes an appearance as Isabel. You know, we see this black wolf that kind of rescues him from, you know, from some of the guards. Isabel's being like really calm about it. Like, oh, it's cool. It's just a wolf. It's like this black wolf. And you're just like, okay, this is interesting. And then.
It's like the giant wolf from Neverending Story. It's like huge.
Oh my gosh. As McQueenie described it, the penis dragon. I was dying when he was describing Neverending Story.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, they capture Broderick to use him to get to the bar, right? So they're both hit or injured by these by the bolts from I believe it's Navarre's crossbow. I don't know. And they essentially Navarre we see Rutger Hauer in his form, and he fights off the guards. They bring the hawk. They bring Isabeau to the Imperius, and he's like this old monk. Anyway, so it kind of starts out like you're wondering, like, well, the bishop's like is so interested in this whole thing. Like he's figured out that that Philippe is has kind of linked up with with Navarre, and essentially they're trying to use that to get to Navarre, and you're just like, oh, okay, well, what's the deal? Like, the bishop's just an evil guy or whatever. Come to find out that the bishop loved Isabeau and cursed them because she loved Navarre. And that's where the whole always together, eternally apart. They can never be with one another, and they can never touch one another in their human forms. Is that right?
So the plot's brilliant, isn't it?
I mean, I like it. It's a
brilliant idea of these two people that
it's
are
like
cursed.
Something out of Greek mythology or something.
Yeah, to never ever be able to spend time with each other, and you have that just that one time where they're next to each other, and it seems like they would arrange to be next to each other every time there was a transformation, but apparently they only do it once. But it's just heartbreaking, right? Where they can almost touch, but it's just too late. There's not enough time. So excellent plot, fantastic plot.
But and that's the thing. It's day and night. In the day, she's a hawk and he's a man. At night, he's a wolf and she is a human, is a woman.
Yeah.
Which kind of sucks for her. I guess she's awake and alive during the day, and so her hawk eyes get the sunlight. But pretty much, like, her whole existence is just living, like, nocturnally. Fortunately, she must have – if all these men are falling in love with her, she must be pretty great to only exist as a human at night and not go insane like most people might, you know? Like, she doesn't become, like, this weird goth witch or something. She's just like, right? Oh, she's just this awesome, like – yeah. She's still, like, really cool. She's got her, like, short hair, and she's Michelle Pfeiffer and, you know – it's just great to hang around.
That should have done the music for this movie. Is the Edgar Winter Project from their album "What They Only Come Out at Night"? Is that what the name of it is?
Edgar Winter.
Isn't that what his name is?
please be Edgar Winter. Frankenstein.
Is that who you're talking about? Yeah. No, that's great. But the music, I thought it was Alan Parsons just. Supervise the music. I thought Alan Parsons wrote the music. And all I know about Alan Parsons is he wrote that song that sometimes played on classic rock stations. Eye in the sky. But yeah, the music was actually written by some other guy, and then Alan Parsons just produced it. But the symphonic parts are really cool. Okay, actually, sorry, Zoe. I just have to ask this really quick. Is the music cool or not?
It is cool. I think it is.
Oh, it's so hard to say, right? Because there's like times where I'm like, this is awful, and there's times where I'm like, this is so awesome.
Like, at times I'm like, why isn't there more synth music in medieval? You know, because whatever. I mean, it's not like they had violins so much, you know?
Yeah, some of it doesn't fit for sure. You're like, why is this music here? I still like the music, but it is like, I don't understand why you chose this.
I like it because it makes it more of a fantasy and less of a like a medieval kind of like it takes it out of history. When I was a kid, I assumed this was, you know, they were saying all this stuff like bishop and, you know, and sword and I don't know, just like all these normal human things. But I assumed when I saw it as a kid that this was just like something that took place on another planet. And I like that.
So I guess the question I have is, so, you know, we come to find out, like, Imperius actually knows this, about this curse. I don't know how. He also reveals that
he was the one who told his superior, the bishop, because the bishop got him drunk and he confessed their confession to the bishop. And that's why he's living with this guilt. And that's why he's trying to redeem himself. Yeah.
So, but how did he know about the curse? Because he was like, oh no, it's very specific. So how this curse can be broken is, you see here, he needs to see you together in your human form. And it's lucky for us, there is going to be a solar eclipse where this could actually be possible. You will get X amount of time together. That is how the curse is broken.
Two things. I have to bring this up. This is why this is the worst movie ever. First of all, how are we going to break the curse? Like, they don't do anything to break the curse. Doesn't the curse just become broken when the eclipse happens? Like, they don't have to do anything.
No.
Yeah, they just have to be in front of the bishop.
The bishop has to see them both in human form together at the same time.
So, but they are in human – but that's the curse breaking, that they're both in human form.
No, I think if the bishop doesn't see it, then as soon as the eclipse ends, then one of them goes back to Manimal.
Yeah.
It's true, John. Fine. The second thing is an eclipse is not a day without a night and a night without a day. It's still daytime. Just because the sun goes in front, the moon goes in front of the sun. That's just something going in front of the sun. That doesn't change night and day.
Science,
John. Geez,
it's medieval times. They thought that the Earth was flat. Which it possibly is. And that everything revolved around the Earth. So science is limited. It makes sense that the screenwriters of this would go back to medieval times and write the screenplay as if they were doing it for medieval times. Like, well, the science of this is actually solar eclipses are a day and a night and a night and a day.
Are you suggesting the screenwriters went back in time? Because I don't
possibly
believe that.
That's going to be on next week. Next week's podcast, Time Travel.
Oh, switching up. Okay.
I mean, so essentially, you know, that's how they've got to get the curse. So then, you know, really the key with the VAR is, I've got Philippe here who can, he's broken out of the bishop's dungeons. You've got to get us back in. And Alfred Molina is Caesar or Caesar. I don't know.
Molina like had a pointless part in this movie, I think. I don't.
Well, yeah, but that's the thing. It's like, yeah, he's a hitman who's hired by the bishop and then dies in his own trap.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool to see him and everything, but
okay, that's cool, Dr. Octopus. I mean, yeah. You're honestly like you're the worst. You're like freaking Guido from freaking New Hope. Like, you're terrible. Like, immediately you're dead. Oh, there's this cool bounty hunter. Okay, how cool is he? He's dead by his own traps. Oh, okay. Cool. So anyway, they're fighting the guards, so they make their way into the bishop's, I don't know, castle, I guess. And during the solar eclipse, window breaks, and essentially we hear a bell ring, which was Imperius's signal to killed Isabel. There's a fight between Marquette. He's the bishop's main guy.
Hang on. Sorry, we got to talk about this. Why was that decision made? Rutger Hauer says he gets these two guys. He gets the old priest together. He gets the mouse together. He's like, I'm going to go in there. I'm going to kill the bishop. I don't really believe that the curse is going to be broken. I just want to kill this guy finally. Right? And so he's like, he goes in there and he's like, if you hear the bells, that means there was like peace in the cathedral or whatever. And that means I failed. And so therefore,
kill
Isabeau. Kill the hawk. Why was that part of the plan? Like, did that make him just as bad as the bishop? Because the bishop's whole idea for this curse is like, okay, well, if I can't have Isabeau, then nobody can. And so he came up with this curse, he went to the witch, and then Rutger Hauer is sitting here like, okay, you know what? If I die, then she has to die too. And I'm not sure why.
It is weird. I'm not okay. I'm not with it, John. I'm not down.
Yeah.
All right, then.
That's a good point. Yeah, so anyway, you know, everything kind of stops. Isabeau becomes human. Everyone stops and stares at her. Bishop gets pissed. Obviously, he's seen them both in human form, grabs his spear, tries to stab her, and then Navarre, Tom Brady's a sword, and the lovers are gets the bishop, and the lovers are together. All is well that ends well.
Yeah, he just came in and assassinated their leader.
He literally killed the entire Catholic Church.
He kills the Catholic Church, and everybody's just kind of okay with it, you know, like,
he kills the Catholic Church.
And that sword, it was a lot more of a spear than a sword, than anything, like, I found him, he tended to throw that sword a lot more than he wafted it.
Right? Yeah, you have sway sword.
I'm not sure how they did the scene where Matthew Broderick is like, I'm through, I've had it, you know, these are your own problems, I'm going to live my own life, and he walks away, and then the sword goes, like, into the tree next to him. He's like, okay, fine, I'll come back. Like, he chucked the sword, and it hits the tree next to him, and I was like, I don't even know how they did that. Like, okay, we're going to hope we're going to throw the sword, and it doesn't, like, impale Matthew Broderick when we're filming this.
Like, yeah, honestly, like, yeah, just... throw the sword. Either you've got a huge crossbow that launches swords, which may be the coolest weapon of all time, or you have Tom Brady throwing the thing, but like Tom Brady from like 5 years ago. But you're right. Like, okay, Matthew Broderick, we're going to do this stunt. Okay, it's going to be just a quick scene. What is it? Walk by that tree, okay? A 4-foot broadsword is going to come right next to you, and we're going to... Okay. Who's going to throw it? You know that toothless stuntman that jumped off the castle earlier? That guy. Okay.
I also have to talk about that stuntman who fell off the castle. There's a sequence in this movie where they're on top of the castle, and the roof. It's just about to become daytime, and the guard is coming up to kill Isabeau and Philippe, and the guard knocks Philippe over. He knocks Isabeau off the turret, right? And she falls.
She's a goner.
45 seconds. Like, but then as she's falling, the sun comes up, she turns into a hawk, gracefully flies away, and she's gorgeous and she's beautiful. That same guard gets pushed off the tower. He's dead in 2 seconds, if that.
Yeah,
he just falls splat.
That's a good point.
Yeah, she just kind of – she had like Michelle Yao power from like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, where she's just kind of floating down. Yeah.
I
love it.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing about this movie is – like I said, they got a lot of bang for their buck. Like I said, I think the production quality is high. I obviously love Rucker Hauer. I love Michelle Pfeiffer. I love some Matthew Broderick. But this is it's really based around a great story, like a very interesting story with, again, a lot of the through line for the three movies, unintentionally, is humanity, right? Like, especially in this one, it's more about, like, the love and what you'll do for someone that you love. And it's about, like, accepting just what your situation is and just trying to move through and kind of keep things together. That's what Navarre and that's what Isabeau are doing. They're trying to cope, but it's about being together. And I actually, it's a really great story. It is a really great story. If there's a ton of thumping, my terrible kids are throwing cars.
Yeah, your kids are fine. There's a really terrifying part of this movie, though, like where they talk about how wolves and hawks mate for life.
Right, and if they mate with each other, right? Is that what you're saying?
And so I don't know if there's like a forest somewhere in Europe where there's these terrible flying wolves or something, but that's horrifying.
So, no, that is horrifying. Going into the horror. I have another big question, like, and this is just something I need you guys to help me with plot wise for this. There was a long sequence of this movie where, and from my understanding, Rutger Hauer, he is just not having it. He's like, I don't believe the curse is going to be broken. All I want to do is kill the, you know, church wizard guy. And he's just doing it. And then Imperius is like, wait 3 days, because in 3 days the curse is going to be broken and you can stand together and that's what's going to do it. And I still find it spurious that, like, once the curse is broken, it's not quite broken. I don't dig that. But they do this thing where they dig a wolf pit and they get Michelle Pfeiffer on board. They're going to trap Rutger Hauer in this wolf pit, but it goes awry. That's when he sinks in the ice and that's when he scratches up Matthew Broderick. It goes awry. They don't trap him. My understanding is that they were going to trap him in there so that they could keep him for that extra day so that they could time the confrontation with the eclipse, because Rutger Hauer was going to go a day earlier and he wasn't having it any other way. But that plot failed. And so why did it wind up that Navarre had the confrontation on the proper day when they weren't able to do that? Oh, I love this silence. This is juicy. This is good. Oh, he's giving some big, huge thing that explains everything.
Right? Oh, that, well, you're so interesting. Oh, my God.
Can you hear me?
It's so
no, we can't.
Okay, you two are so stupid. You two are a bunch of stupids, and I hate you so
okay,
bad.
So you cut out for like 2 minutes there. By the
you
way,
did.
Yeah. Sorry.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. We can both hear you now. So yeah.
Okay.
Please explain.
Here's the deal. Okay.
Okay.
So when he realizes that he mauled Philippe, right? It's when he's finally kind of able to listen to what they're trying to do,
okay.
What the plan was. And then he says, I'll show you idiots how to cage a wolf. So he helps them create whatever cage. And we don't see it. They don't act it out. It happens off scene. It's in the same location where the transmorphers are transmorphing. But so they do cage him. They cage him that night. And then they're able to transport him to where they need to go.
So that's what I missed that line. Thank you for showing that. Couldn't he just walk into the cage? And in fact, isn't that what he did? And then like when he got into the cage, was like, see, I know how to cage a wolf. So
yeah,
it's really just an ego project.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I hope that even though that would be the much easier solution, that he still waited to transform into a wolf and then they had to catch him.
But yeah, well, they didn't have to catch him because as a human, he could have just waited that extra day.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Hmm.
Whoa, I burped.
Richard Donner movie, by the way, which I forgot about.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. I'm not.
Yeah, this is the follow-up to Superman.
I don't love Richard Donner movies, I don't think. So, but I will say, so this film is so fascinating, right? Because I like you said, John, this is one of those ones where they're like a kind of an 80s film that we look back on, and maybe it's not as well remembered as the rest. But as I'm watching it, like, I'm so torn, like, is this movie brilliant? Is this movie awful? And I swear, this movie is so close to being worthy of Mystery Science Theater 3000. Like, it's on the edge of that knife, right?
Really? Okay.
But also, like, it's also really good. It's like a bad movie, but it's a good movie, and it's hard for me to really tell how I feel about it.
Well,
high quality flops.
I would say, like, the worst effect I would say is when Michelle Pfeiffer is hanging off the castle. You can really see the green screen residue there, right?
Yeah.
Like that's something. But for the most part, the rest of the movie, like, there are like long takes, not a lot of editing. You know, they did a lot of stunt work and everything.
Yeah.
Besides that, I think this is a very well put together movie for the time, actually. Like, what else is bad? What else is like worth mocking about it?
Well, like that one night where instead of turning into the wolf, he turns into the beaver. That's ridiculous.
I don't remember that. Are you talking about the just where it just fades out on him and then fades in on a wolf kind of thing?
No, it faded in on a beaver.
Okay.
So anyway, whatever. I don't know. So some of these movies that I'm have nostalgia for, I sometimes I feel maybe I'm hypercritical, but I like just bits and pieces of it. I don't know.
Well,
so,
I mean, like for this one, like I look at this, like because this came out around the same time as Superman 4, and I remember seeing like Superman. This is a bit earlier than Superman 4. I remember seeing Superman 4 in the theater, and I remember not liking it as much as the first Superman movies. But I remember thinking, oh, yeah, no, that's Superman. He did those things, and he fought this goofy villain. But I don't remember, like, just how terrible it actually looked, because I was a kid. I think watching Lady Hawk now, I'm actually kind of more impressed with it. I'm like, oh, this was a little bit more thought out. Like, they didn't take the shortcuts that I'm used to catching now as an adult. Or not.
So, Superman 4 was Christopher Reeve's favorite of the whole bunch, which is so depressing to me.
Well, I think probably because he have a hand in like the story. Like he wanted it to be his anti-nuclear story, right?
Yeah, that was it. All right, you guys ready to talk some awards or what?
Yeah, let's do awards.
Let's
do awards.
Let's get this over with. Okay. Roy, Alien. Uh-huh. Who is your alien for this clump?
This clump? Yeah. I went with a Skeleton Odo from The Last Unicorn.
Skeleton. Oh, Skelodo.
Son of a gun.
Yeah, nice. Skelodo.
Okay. Zoe, do you agree?
Oh, yeah. That's I was telling Jen, like, the skeleton is the best part of this whole thing. So my honorable mention is the was it Pembroke? Is that his name?
Mabrook, the other magician, Mabrook.
Yeah, Mabrook. Oh.
Yeah,
he's my runner up. But yeah, the skeleton is the best one.
Okay, you both picked the skeleton. I definitely picked Pinocchio himself because it's a complete foreign intelligence to our universe. And so I definitely call Pinocchio the best alien of the clump for sure. Like, there's none other like him, so that's weird.
This is such a fun clump of films.
okay, Roy, best food.
The taco. No. Oh, okay. Because we never saw the tacos, right? Maybe they weren't any good. But if you remember, Geppetto, when they were waiting for Pinocchio to come home from school, they had a serious feast. Quite a spread. So I'm going to go with the uneaten feast at Geppetto's.
What was there at the feast?
Some fresh fish, which I think would have been weird if you're the fish. Some fish, some bread. It looks good.
Okay. All right, Zoe, you got a food?
Sweat stew.
All right, I did go with the taco anyway. Just because, I mean, it was like medieval England or wherever they were. Where are they? Maybe, was it America? Are they in America in The Last Unicorn?
I don't know. But that's like straight out of the book, right? Like, that quote comes right out of the book.
Yeah.
And so weird. So.
So anyway, I think a taco because it would have been very unique in that setting. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what does sweat do?
Roy, best outfit.
Okay, I'm going to go with Lady Amalthea's dress. So the unicorn gets a lovely dress when she's a human. It's just, it's lovely. So there you go.
Okay. Zoe, outfit.
My favorite outfit is Geppetto's outfit.
Oh, wow. It's pretty basic, Northern Italy kind of. Yeah.
No, let me tell you why. Because there's a Family Guy scene with Geppetto and Pinocchio, mm-hmm. and Geppetto is essentially wearing the same outfit he's wearing in Pinocchio, and that's how the Family Guy drew him. And he says, he's like, "Okay, Pinocchio," and Pinocchio's standing behind him, and Pinocchio and Geppetto bends over, and he's like, "Now you can tell me a lie," and he essentially is having Pinocchio lie while he's bent over in front of him, and that for me is why Geppetto's outfit is my favorite.
All right, yeah, that sounds like you. Sounds just like you. Very nice. Okay. All right, well, I think the best outfit, I implied it earlier, but it's Navarre's medieval Batman outfit that he wears constantly.
All right, then.
Best death, Roy.
Yeah, I went with Alfred Molina head in bear trap death.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Yep.
Very good. Okay, you agree, Zoe?
Yeah, that or the Angela Lansbury character getting eaten by the harpy in Last Unicorn.
Okay, that was actually my pick. Yeah, her face was eaten by a harpy. That's pretty good. I'll quickly mention my honorable mention. It's what's his name? Marquette, the new captain of the guard who was all dressed in white. That was actually really interesting. That like Marquette was dressed in white and he had a white horse, and Rutger Hauer. Dressed in black, and he had a black horse, which, you know, playing on the whole hero villain, you know, what kind of color they wear. Obviously, the good guy is going to have a white horse because he represents the church, and the church is good, right? But no, not in this movie. Let's see here. Okay, no, my runner-up for the death is Marquette's horse that reared backwards and, threw Marquette off that way, and it fell on its back. Because that actor was probably shot after that. Because I don't think that was supposed to happen. Yeah, and it probably hurt its leg.
That's funny.
Okay, best guest, Roy.
I went with René Auberjonois.
Oh.
So two awards for him.
Okay, not recurring on René Auberjonois.
Nope.
Zoe, guest?
Best guest is Michelle Pfeiffer, because we don't see her enough in this movie.
That's a good way to put it, yeah. I think we need to see more of her. Same movie for me. I went with Alfred Molina, because he just makes a just... It was just a quick visit. Just, hey, I'm Alfred Molina. my head's ripped in half now.
I'm here to kill you, I'm dead.
So Michelle Pfeiffer is probably my favorite actress of our lifetime. I don't know if I'm just basing that just on looks. But I love Michelle Pfeiffer. She's fantastic.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm done.
Roy, recurring character.
I went with Alan Arkin.
Oh, of course, because he was in Wait Until Dark. Okay.
He sure was.
Zoe, recurring?
I also went with Alan Arkin.
Okay. Yeah, very good call. I didn't think of that before I wrote these down. I went with René Auberjonois, because he was in a bunch of Star Trek, so...
Jeff Bridges was my runner-up because of
True Grit. Yeah. I thought about True Grit.
Mm. But Alan Arkin is just—he's Alan Arkin.
Yeah,
he's good. He's the nice police chief, and So I Married an Axe Murderer. That's how all of us.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Everyone around here calls me Vicky.
Roy, acting.
Alan Arkin. I mean, he gets my best actor award.
He's gonna just is okay. So, are we just giving it to every award to Alan Arkin?
Yeah, if you want to stop, I mean,
we might.
We're done. So,
Zoe, acting.
Best actor. Oh, for sure, Matthew Broderick. In fact, now that I think about it, his British accent was my favorite guest star.
Okay. Broderick. I don't think he was quite properly cast.
He was so terrible. No, he was. That whole thing was just terrible. Truthfully, it was Rucker Hauer. I just enjoy seeing him anytime he's on screen.
Oh, very good. I will say, I do really like... Actually, did I write that down? Oh, do I have a line? I don't have a line, do I? Ugh, shoot. Okay, never mind. I'll write that down. Okay, I went with Pfeiffer. I'm going to go Pfeiffer. I think she's just so natural and great, and you just want to be near her. So,
agreed.
Okay, best planet or place? Roy.
Oh, man, I know I've got this. Okay, I put from Pinocchio, the Italian Alps. Now, it sucks, because if you're a kid, there is a real good chance you're going to get kidnapped.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's lovely.
There's a real good chance you're going to be mutated into another animal if you're a kid in that area. Yeah. Okay, Zoe, best place.
My honorable mention was the Bull's Lair in Last Unicorn, but probably the winner is going to be Pleasure Island.
Ooh.
I would do well there.
So, of all the things in Pleasure Island you're not supposed to do, can you imagine, like, just having, like, a house, right? There's just a house, and you're just allowed to just tear it apart. Hmm. I mean, that's got to be fun for at least 10 minutes. So.
Yeah, this is always my theory on hell. I wrote a little mini screenplay a long time ago, where the idea was, someone gets possessed, you know, by a demon, and so their body is, like, in this demon. But in the meantime, their soul actually goes to hell into the body of the demon in hell, and they get to see what hell is like during this possession. And they come to discover that hell has been around for so many, like, you know, thousands of years, that they all just eventually just kind of got used to just living with each other, and they kind of just made it a better place together. and so maybe that's what Pleasure Island would be like. You know, it's like, okay, you get it out of the system that you destroy a house, and then the next day you're just like, all right, well, I don't have to do that again. So they don't. Okay, best... my favorite location is the Unicorn's Forest. Yeah.
Oh.
It's like got the protection of a unicorn. It's pretty good.
Just because the hope that a young Mia Sara is there, obviously.
Oh.
I'm hoping for a young Angela Lansbury in her 60s.
Yeah. Okay, technology, Roy. What's the best technology?
Well, it's obvious that from Lady Hawk, it's the double crossbow. It doesn't have just one bolt, it's got two.
Yeah. Double crossbow.
Double crossbow. And there were good parts where he wasn't watching himself. He's like, oh, whoop, I gotta fire the other bolt. But his enemies didn't realize that he had a double crossbow. Like, oh, good, he fired. Oh, wait, no. That's a good one. Zoe?
Best technology is the wishing star.
That's a good... Oh, that's big. That, like, that does all, right? Okay, well, I feel... Mine is pretty meager. Mine is just Geppetto's spanking clock.
Oh, boy.
Okay, Roy, best name.
Let's see. Where are you? Schmendrick the Magician.
Yep.
That's
pretty good.
Schmendrick the Goldblum. That is the best name.
I agree. That's a triple. Okay, that award is yours, mine, and theirs approved. We all agree. Schmendrick. Our theory, Roy, if I remember correctly, our theory behind his name was that so people couldn't scoff at him, because, you know, if your name was like Paul or something, it's like, oh, well, Paul said this. Well, Paul Schmall, you know, Paul Schmall, whatever. But you can't do that with Schmendrick. Schmendrick, Schmendrick. Yeah, yeah.
Schmendrick Kendrick. Oh, you made his name normal. Okay, well, that doesn't work as well. I think the name award should be called the Schmendrick Award.
Yeah, it's honorary. That's the best name we've had. Okay, Roy, this is a big one.
Yes?
Villain.
Okay, from Pinocchio, the coachman. He's about as evil a character as in any of these films.
Right, child trafficker, coachman.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's a G-rated movie.
Yeah.
So?
Oh, yeah, no, he's definitely the winner for the best villain, but... he's my number one. My honorary is going to be the changing of the day to night and the changing of the night to day.
Oh, dang it.
Good. Yeah, that's bad. It's keeping lovers apart.
Mm.
All right, well, my villain is the Blue Fairy for just blatantly disregarding the laws of life in the universe.
Okay.
All right, Roy, the hero.
So I'm going with Prince Lear because he faces the Red Bull even when it's certain death.
He was the worst, man.
His singing voice left something to be desired.
Well, read my Letterboxd review, because it was kind of my favorite part of the movie, where he's like, Schmendrick, use your magic, save her. He's like, no, that's what heroes are for. And then Lear is like, that is what heroes are for. And then he just immediately, instantaneously gets trampled. Just trampled. Okay, Zoe, hero
is Navarre. He was my favorite. He's probably my favorite character ever. He's great.
He's great. I went with solar eclipses as the.
Oh, dang it! You nailed it. Oh,
yeah.
It.
Okay, title, Roy.
Lady Hawke.
Lady Hawke. Yeah. So
hey, you said that. I said Lady Hawke.
Okay.
All right. I say Lady Hark.
Hark. Okay.
We all agree Lady Hawk is the best title, even though I don't get the title. I think it's kind of cool and flashy that it has an E on the end and lady. I like ladies. But what's up with it? It doesn't represent the film. But nevertheless, it's better than Pinocchio and the Last Unicorn, because those are just
who is that lady?
Too representative.
It's a hawk. Oh, yeah. Who is that hawk? It's a lady.
It's a lady.
And
that's what we're going to title the movie.
She's a lady hawk.
Well, there's a part in the movie where Matthew Broderick says, and will Lady Hawk be joining us? And Rutger Hauer's like, Lady Hawk? How did you come up with that one? What?
Did you just pronounce the E? Did you pronounce the E?
Lady Hawk.
This movie should have been titled Ye Old Lady Hawk.
Ye Old Lady Hawk.
Awesome.
I would love that so much.
Right? I know you would.
I like it. Okay. All right. The best WTF moment, Roy.
So from The Last Unicorn, we're going with a saggy boob tree.
Okay. Okay.
It's pretty weird.
That's a good one.
That's a good one. Zoe?
Yeah, that's a good one. For me, the WTF moment was the coachman when you realize, oh, Pleasure Island is where he kidnaps boys. Okay.
Yeah, that's bad. For me, it was also in The Last Unicorn, and it was just the story didn't end with them falling in love and ending there. That it actually went on after that. I was surprised at that. Okay. Best quote. Turns out I did write this down.
Okay,
and I forgot
for
what I was going to write down a second ago. I was going to write something else a second ago, but I have something else. Okay, Roy, best quote.
So I've already said it, and my runner-up from The Last Unicorn is "I can feel this body dying all around me," and that might be the best quote. But the butterflies quote about "your name is a golden bell hung in my heart. I'd break myself to pieces to call you once by your name." So that's what I went with.
Okay.
Oh,
cool.
What was that one that you just said? That first one. That was a good quote.
"I can feel this body dying all around me."
That was a good quote. I'm not gonna lie to you. I was like, oh man, wow, that's actually okay. That carries weight. This movie sucks, but that carries weight.
All right,
up to a 0.5 stars.
Quote. So.
My quote is, it's actually okay. It's Navarre says, "Each generation is called upon to follow its own quest." Philippe says, "And what is your quest?" Navarre: "I must kill a man." And if he goes, "Tell me, does this walking corpse have a name?" I actually thought that was the best. That was my favorite.
Nice. Okay.
Because I love that, like, he's straight up referencing, dude, this movie's a quest. Oh, okay. And then he adds, you know, and then Matthew Broderick adds some humor onto the end of that. So I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. My quote is from Last Unicorn, and it's Schmendrick quickly saying, it's almost like an aside, it's, "There are no happy endings because nothing ever ends."
That's a really good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
So there is, yeah, there is a really great quote in Lady Hawk that I also considered, and it's when he brings the bird, the injured bird, to the castle, right? And then Perry says, "What do you want? I was told to bring you this bird. It's been wounded." "Oh, good shot. Bring it in. We'll dine together. We can't eat this bird." "What? Is it Lent again already?" I thought that was good.
Roy, your
yes, sir.
Beef. Beefcake. Who's the hottest man?
See, it would be Rutger Hauer, but I hate picking the main actors or actresses, right?
I know.
Because They're not part of that extra budget. They're the stars, right?
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
So I was tempted to go with Alfred Molina's teeth. I didn't. So I'm going with Robin Hood from The Last Unicorn.
Okay. Yeah, they had to add him.
Okay.
It's a hunky. Yeah. Okay. Very good. Zoe Beefcake.
I mean, the obvious answer is Rutger Hauer, but to your point, Roy, you know, it's kind of it feels cheap and. Choosing Rutger Hauer. So I'm going to choose Rutger Hauer's sweet hair.
Yeah, you guys are both... I think you guys... I don't know. You guys both had pretty derivative picks. I'm going to go with Rutger Hauer.
You're welcome to do it, John.
No. It's got to be Rutger Hauer. Okay, and Cheesecake.
He's the Johnny Cash. He's the Johnny Cash of the Dark Ages.
Yes.
Right.
The Cheesecake Award goes to the Blue Fairy from Pinocchio.
Yeah, there was extra budget on that. I'm sure they actually hired a model to come in and they filmed her and then they rotoscoped her. That's probably what they did with the Blue Fairy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Zo.
Wait, this is the Hot Chick Award, right?
Yes,
yeah.
Hot Chick.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, Michelle Pfeiffer. Come on, like anything besides Michelle Pfeiffer is wrong.
I know.
I can't pick the stars. I can't make myself pick the stars. I can't do it.
You can choose Michelle Pfeiffer. Do the right thing. CTR, and you choose Michelle Pfeiffer because
can't do it.
She's oh my gosh, she's money. She's money.
The thing is, I'm also picking Michelle Pfeiffer. And I do like the idea that, you know, there is the hidden budget that's only to get the hot chicks, and I like that. But the thing is, the actors actually talk about how everyone falls in love with her and yada yada yada. And I've seen so many movies where people are like, "Oh, everyone falls in love with her," and then you meet the girl And yeah, she's pretty, and you know, she could be in magazines or whatever, but just there's something, but she just has this void of presence. But I think Michelle Pfeiffer, she does not have the void, you know? You can see through her looks and her personality and just the way she behaves and throws herself she's the real thing.
She's regal.
She taught ghetto kids to Coolio music.
So not like to the same extent, but I feel a little bit the same way with Rafina from Sing Street.
Right.
That actress and that character has a really
wonderful. She has the presence. I was going to bring up Sing Street.
She's the best.
When I was talking about Last Unicorn, if there's one thing, I don't know if I've talked to you about this with you guys, but if there's one thing I didn't like about Sing Street is I don't think he should have wound up with Rafina at the end. I think it would have been a better movie if she was just the catalyst, kind of, to get him into music and to get him into art and get him to find himself. Yeah. And then at the end, he kind of strikes out on his own and he makes a better place for himself. And yes, he was hurt by the relationship, but it also is what got him to find himself, kind of thing. I think that would have been a better way to end.
I would love the opportunity to have an extended discussion on this film.
On Sing Street?
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. I'm so down with that because I actually really love that movie. I've been wanting to rewatch it. But let me tell you, Jen brought up a good point. The obvious hottie budget went to Three Titty Harpy.
Oh, that's a good point.
How much for each mammo cannon?
Yeah, no, they actually had to budget for an extra boob. That's true. That makes sense.
If mammary serves me correctly.
Your last thought would be, wow, they're just right there in my face.
Yeah.
What a train wreck.
There you go. Yeah. Okay, those are the normal awards. Now for the Manimal Awards.
Yeah.
As I like to call them, the Manimals. the Manimals. Okay, what is your most preferred Manimal? And by preferred, I mean, which of these Manimals would you probably most like to be? Roy?
I'm going to go with the Lady Hawk, because you get to fly, and so that's all there is to it.
Right. Zoe, anything?
For me, it'd be Lone Wolf. I mean, obviously, the Hawk makes the most sense, but Lone Wolf, the Black Lone Wolf, I'm in. That's kind of awesome.
I like being able to fly, and I also like being able to just enjoy my night. Have my nights free. So, I also...
Unicorns are immortal, though. The unicorn's immortal.
Yes, but...
So we'd all choose the Three-Titty Harpy.
No. The thing is, we can't choose either of those things because those aren't manimals. The unicorn is just a unicorn. It's not a manimal. And the harpy is just a harpy. So you can't pick
real
those.
Real-life Angela Lansbury.
Right. Okay, the least preferred manimal.
Well, it's got to be Donkey Boy.
Yeah.
Because he's got donkey lungs, donkey boobs. Mm-hmm. It's a mess.
Yeah.
It is a mess.
It's bad. Zoe, do you say Donkey Boy?
Wooden Donkey Boy.
I was just going to say
you can catch fire.
Boy. Yeah. I'm so out.
I agree. Wooden Donkey Boy. Okay. Who is the best looking manimal?
Well, that's got to be the Lady Corn, and I'm requalifying her.
Okay. So what do you say?
Lady Corn, man, that's a pretty good pick, but I've been wanting to say this now, this whole episode. I'm going to say Rutger Hauer of the Wolf.
That's true. He's pretty hot.
I don't know. It's just a little bit.
You know,
it doesn't have
my reference to a Bergman movie and Rutger Hauer all in the same breath.
Hour of the Wolf. Okay, that's good. That's good. That's good.
Thank
reference.
You. It is good.
Yeah. I respect you. You've earned my respect again. It's been lost for years, but
finally,
okay.
I tried to kiss him one time at the Oscar party, and I lose his respect.
Yeah. That's Yeah, no, that's true. No. Okay, I'm not picking Amalthea because, as we've discussed, Lady Corn is not a manimal. Should never have been involved in this whole podcast. So I'm going to go with Donkey Boy.
Donkey Boy? Oh, man.
Okay.
Your mom would be so disappointed that's what you chose because of the drinking and the smoking. Your mom would be disappointed. And I'm with her.
I know. All right. Roy, who would win between all the manimals? Who's going to win?
I think, honestly, it's going to come the Lady Corn's immortal, right? But only she can still be killed. I think it's coming down to Lady Hawk and Navarre Wolf. I think Navarre Wolf's going to win. If the Lady Hawk can gouge out some eyes, maybe. But I'm going to give it to the Wolf.
Okay. Zoe?
Yeah, Wolf's the Wolf. The Wolf is going to win.
Okay. Well, I'm definitely going to go with Donkey Boy. Because the thing about... Think about Donkey Boy.
Your mom it's right now, as a
Donkey Boy is a true there's a true hybrid here though. The hawk is still just a hawk. I mean, you get the sense, and the wolf is just a wolf. You get the sense that they lose their human intelligence when they turn into these animals. They're still devoted to each other, but they lose something. And so surely Donkey Boy can come up with something.
he's a marionette who lives with some old man and a cricket. But guaranteed he's not coming up with anything.
He escapes Monstro.
Yeah. That's true. And also, he's just beginning his life. Who knows what kind of potential Pinocchio can be?
Yeah, the Donkey Boy.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, those are our awards.
I'm never calling Pinocchio Pinocchio again.
it's Donkey Boy.
Donkey Boy.
It is Donkey Boy. Like,
oh boy!
Rankings?
Yeah, you ready?
Roy, number three.
Yeah, my number three is Pinocchio.
Wow. Yep. Okay. Zoe, your number three?
Last Unicorn.
Okay.
But it's not even third. It's like seventh.
You know what? My third really is third, and I can honestly say I love this movie. I think it's awesome, and it's my number three, and I actually am going to go with Last Unicorn.
Yay!
But I love it. I love it.
Same page.
Stop being happy. Stop being happy. All right. My number two, I'm going to go with Lady Hawk because of the sweet synths, and I love
it. Wait a second. We have different lists. I was going to bet that John and I had the same list.
No.
What? How does this keep happening?
I don't know. It sounds like we're all going to have three different number ones.
Yeah, it does sound that way, doesn't it?
So what's your number two?
It is.
Yeah.
Pinocchio is going to be my number two because it feels like a cartoon. It feels like an animated version of an independent documentary that was made like 3 years ago about how terrible cartels are children and using them for cartel fuel. I don't know what cartel fuel is, but you can only imagine.
Donkeys.
This is fascinating to me, though, that our opinions are so very different on this one. So my number two is Lady Hawk, and my number one is obviously The Last Unicorn. And it's weird because...
What?
Because The Last Unicorn is not just my number one. It's number one, and then Lady Hawk is number five, and then Pinocchio's number six, or something like that. The Last Unicorn is probably a top 10 movie for me, like, of all time.
I have to go back a little bit more. No, I mean, because I know you love The Last Unicorn, but I am kind of surprised because you were bagging on Lady Hawk. You said it's like Mystery Science Theater worthy, nearly. So I am actually surprised that you liked it better than Pinocchio. It sounds like you really don't like Pinocchio.
No, I mean, Lady Hawk is great, and Pinocchio is beautiful. I don't enjoy Pinocchio that much. I don't love watching Pinocchio, other than just admiring it. So I don't know. I mean, those two are pretty close, but The Last Unicorn, seriously, is just like way
That's amazing. Up. Okay.
All right. So
I mean, obviously, Lady Hawk's my number one.
Your number one is now The Last Unicorn?
Yes.
You know what? Ray's talked me into it. He's talked me into a lot of things.
Lady Hawk.
Yeah, honestly, like Lady Hawk for me, it's like the perfect like 80s quest flash. I mean, it's Rucker Hauer and Michelle Pfeiffer, and to a much lesser extent, like it's fun kind of seeing Matthew Broderick. Because when was Ferris Bueller's Day Off? It was that 85 as well.
It's like 1 year later. It came after this.
Okay, so I've got kids now. Lady Hawk is my number one. It's something that if I watched it tonight with Jen, I'd be stoked. I really do like Lady Hawk a lot.
Yeah. No, Lady Hawk is awesome, and I love it, and I love the music, and I love the weirdness of it, and I love the sword throwing, and I love how Philippe can get out of someone's like holds by just like struggling out of their arms and just falling down. And
right.
Yeah.
And just for the record, his outfit may have been the best. I was thinking about this after we did the rankings. Mm-hmm. His outfit may have been the best because he was collecting it off trees of peasants as he was in the prison. So his outfit may have been the best outfit.
It was a great. I liked his knee-length tunic a lot. Yeah. And actually, you know what? This is my honorable mention for line because I just remembered it. When Matthew Broderick, he's constantly praying throughout the movie. He's trying to get to know this relationship with God. And he says, God, if I get out of here, I promise I'll never steal anything again. And he gets out of there and he immediately steals from that soldier. And he goes, I know I promised I'd never steal anything again. But also, you know me and you know I'm weak-willed. And so this is really on you, isn't it, God?
Yeah, that was an honorable mention quote. That was pretty good.
Yeah. Okay. Well, my number one is Pinocchio. As I said, because I found it frightening and scary, and I thought it was beautiful, as well as it was a fairy tale where it had weird rules, but I don't know. I felt the stakes. I guess that's the best way I could put it. And so I really appreciated Pinocchio. It's the first time I've really, really watched it, and it was great. Okay. Roy, how do we arrange our next podcast coming up?
Oh, boy. You should get excited. So our next podcast is going to be Ensemble Cast Comedies.
Okay.
And the fans have picked Three Amigos, which makes me so happy.
That's very happy. There's no movie has been more quoted. Yeah.
Yeah. I just love that movie. So I get a pick and you get a pick, John. I'm going first.
Okay.
So I'm taking It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. There's no sense in picking.
Yeah. No way.
There's no sense in doing this podcast without watching that movie. Yeah. And it's an amazing
Jen's
movie.
Gonna love that.
Yeah.
Good pick.
It's great. And it is streaming currently on Amazon Prime, but I think both of you probably own it anyway. Fine. I'll watch it on Amazon Prime. All right. Well, since you picked It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, and that is like, come on, well, that's like 3 hours long.
Yes, it is.
All right, well, that forces my hand. I'm going to pick a movie that is 67 minutes long.
Let me see.
What do you think,
Marx Brothers? I would say Marx Brothers or an Abbott and Costello.
Oh, I'm assuming you're doing the Wet Hot American Summer, but...
I almost picked Wet Hot American Summer. But no, I did want to pick one that I haven't seen. And Zoe, you got it, actually. We're going Horse Feathers, which is a Marx Brothers movie. Yeah. Which I've never seen.
I haven't seen it. I've seen Duck Soup, which is excellent.
Brilliant.
I've seen Night of the Opera, I don't like as much as Duck Feathers or Duck Soup. But I just said I didn't like it as much.
I was actually all set to pick A Night at the Opera, but I was listening to the Gilbert Gottfried podcast yesterday. And he referenced Horse Feathers, and he and his friend who's on that podcast, they also said A Night at the Opera was what they felt was kind of the beginning of a downward slide for the Marx Brothers. And I know a lot of people don't agree with that because A Night at the Opera is like kind of considered the best one, I thought. But anyway, according to Gilbert Gottfried, I think he kind of prefers Horse Feathers. And I kind of figured maybe nobody's seen Horse Feathers. So
no, that's a great pick. Awesome.
That's awesome.
I didn't see A Night at the Opera until 5 years ago, actually.
Okay.
And Jen is not a Marx Brothers fan or anything. I'm like, you know what? No, screw this. I'm watching Night of the Opera, and we both loved it. And I laughed so hard that I cried. I was laughing. It was hysterical, and I was shocked. That's actually my first dip of the toes in the Marx Brothers, and I was like, okay, I'm going to start watching stuff. I am excited for this pick. That's a great pick. I am super excited.
I think
good we, pick.
Yeah,
good
we
job,
can't
you guys.
Go wrong with this next group. I think it's going to be super fun.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. So the next category, which we'll have to get votes on, is what a year.
Okay.
Now we have to decide what year we're talking about, because this is we pick a year and we simply it's three random films from that year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what's our range here? What are we talking about?
I say it's between 1939 and 1989. 1939 and 1989.
Yeah. Isn't that what I said?
39 to 89. I like that. So for 50-year block there?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Okay. All right. You guys ready?
Yeah.
I'm just doing this randomly, so you guys tell me when to stop.
Okay.
Okay, you do it, Madbeard. I'm hoping for 1984, but you do it, Madbeard.
Yeah, that would be good. Okay, I'm still talking. I'm just stalling. Okay, stop.
The happiest of all cinema years. We're doing 1966.
Okay.
It's like in the 60s, they just forgot what fun was like, right?
1966. But, I think that is that Bonnie and Clyde?
No, Bonnie and Clyde is 67.
Okay. I'm really quickly going to see. We got Alfie with Michael Caine.
Oh, Michael Caine. My name's Michael Caine.
The Batman, the Adam West Batman was 66.
Oh.
That's 66 Batman. Nice.
Fantastic Voyage. Oh, we got Antonioni's Blow Up is 66.
Oh, that is on my list.
So keep in mind that I will get to pick a movie, and Zoe will get to pick a movie, and the fans will pick a movie.
Okay, so I don't get to pick a movie.
You don't get to pick a movie.
Is it just The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly?
Was that a 66?
Also, How to Steal a Million is 66.
Oh. How to Steal a Million, do brilliant.
Well, we've done that one.
Yeah, we have. We have also done Good, Mad, the Ugly.
Yep.
Well, brilliant. Okay,
wow. I don't know.
Interesting to see. So, when I post this on the webpage, I'll probably post a link to a Wikipedia article for movies in 1966.
Surely, Fantastic Voyage will win.
Something douchey in French. I'm gonna go super douchey on this one. I'm excited.
Okay. Awesome.
All right. And now the last order of business is guys gotta. We got to come up with some new categories here.
Okay, new categories. Let's see. I narrowed it down to four of them. Let's see.
Oh, I've got one. I have one, and it's. I hope it wins.
Sure, let's hear it.
Philip K. Dick.
No, okay. Philip Dick movies.
Philip Dick movies. Okay.
Like honestly, I'm just like, because I want to watch. I want to watch Blade Runner so bad on this podcast.
Oh man, I've been dying so to watch it. Yeah.
Okay, you know what? I'm gonna change it. No, I'm gonna no. Ugh, it's between these two. Ugh, I'm sorry, you guys. I'm gonna go with Jack, You Dead. Movies about the afterlife.
Ooh.
The deal with the afterlife in some way. Yeah.
Okay. So, like Beetlejuice could qualify.
Heaven Can Wait is a big one. Yeah. Flatliners qualifies. Oh, definitely Flatliners. Yeah.
Okay.
Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. We've kind of already done that one, kind of, on the other podcast. So that might not count because we don't want to do too many doubles.
The Seventh Seal.
Seventh Seal.
Just going to say Seventh Seal.
I think Seventh Seal counts for sure. I don't think he actually goes into the afterlife, but.
Oh my gosh! There's so many good. What about Darby O'Gill and the Little People?
I guess.
Darby O'Gill.
Because he has like the coach at the end that comes from the dead world, and maybe not, but anyway.
Hmm. Yeah.
What dreams may come, I suppose.
What dreams may come? Defending Your Life is a big one. That's kind of one I always think of. So
the five people you meet in heaven. That'd be fun.
That'd be so fun.
You would love that. Yeah. All right. You ready to figure what our random pick is going to be?
Yes.
All right. You Zoe, you tell me when to stop.
Yeah.
Do it. Okay,
number 27. Where does that leave us? Zombie movies. They were a bit bitey.
Nice.
So straight up zombie movies.
Oh, dude. I really love these categories.
I'm looking forward to finally seeing a zombie movie.
Really? So I'm just going to guess right now that that's going to be the category that wins.
Okay. Well, I guess we missed it for Halloween, so I guess it's making up.
All right. Well, that's them. Well, what do you guys talk? What do we want to talk about? We done?
I think we're done. I'm really excited for the next group for sure. I'm really excited because I ordered Horse Feathers on Netflix yesterday. That should be arriving tomorrow, and I own Three Amigos, and I have access to its Mad World.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
It won't take me long to have watched these three movies. It would be because we're gonna have a Star Trek podcast probably coming up here pretty quick, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, you guys get on it. Watch these movies.
All right. Everybody listening, do too, and also if you're not listening, do that. We should.
I always say I'm going to do it this time. I'm going to be on top of stuff, and then Roy's like, yeah, but it's we talked about this Tuesday, and it's Thursday, and I'm done, and I've already moved on and watched six movies from this. What's up? Okay, you're the most on task.
No, I'm just the person who's got the most spare time, and it's probably not even close.
Nice. Well,
true. Three kids, four and under. I have no spare time.
I prize my time, so. You know.
John, if you're listening to this podcast for the first time, what are some things that you'd want to know?
If I were listening to this for the first time, I'd want to know, how do I talk to these guys? They sound great, or they sound terrible, and I want to reprimand them. I'd probably send them an email that's yoursmindtheirspodcast@gmail.com. Yeah, Gmail, that's true. We still use Google, we still use Gmail, and that's a thing, yoursmindtheirspodcast@gmail.com. Let us know you're there. Also, feel free to insult us or say whatever you want to us. Roy, let's just say we've done this for 100 episodes, and iTunes and Stitcher, they no longer carry the old episodes. What's a good way to go there?
Oh, that's a pickle. Fortunately, you and I have a website, yoursmindtheirspodcast.blogspot.com, and they are all there. Every single one we've done is there.
All right, and it has a picture from one of each of the movies that we do for that particular episode, so...
And always a clever title.
Clever titles. If you don't like one of the titles, see me. That's what I'm in charge of.
It's actually a podcast that we're going to start called Clever Titles. And then what we'll do is we'll come up with alternate titles to what Madbeard has already come up with.
We should do that. We should do that. Any clever titles for this range that we did? Go ahead.
Manimal.
Mortality. Humanity. Always together. Eternally apart. I don't know.
Okay. I'll write that one down.
That was terrible.
We'll be good.
I feel like it's hard to beat Manimal, but John, I trust you.
Okay.
I don't know. Rutger Hauer of the Wolf.
That's
pretty brilliant.
That's good.
I've been so patting myself on the back.
The last Hauer.
I could do Rutger Hauer of the Wolf.
Oh, or the last Hauer.
Or spell it Hauer of the Wolf.
Yeah, I would spell it Hauer of the Wolf. Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah.
Brilliant.
For sure.
Okay.
There you go. Nice. See?
I like the last Hauer. As in like the last hour, but Hauer anyway.
The last Hauer Hawk.
The last Hauer Hawk.
The last Hauer Hawk. Oh, yeah. Have a taco.
Can we just call it Donkey Hawk Boy?
it's going to be Donkey Boy. Donkey Boy.
Call it Donkey Boy. That's brilliant.
Okay. No, what else? JR, say something about iTunes.
Yeah, man. You're listening to this because you found us on iTunes or whatever. But so the most important part is you got to give us a review. Just one review. But it's got to be 5 stars, okay? So once you've given us that 5-star review, we're in business. You can say whatever you want. That's the worst podcast I've ever listened to, as long as you got the 5 stars. So
totally. Do that. Yeah. That's the most important thing. Also,
this podcast sucks. 5 stars.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Please, how did this get made? 5-star reviews. Worst podcast ever. These three guys are jerks.
Yeah. You guys out there, find us on Facebook also. Most of the fun stuff, most of our dialogue with each other and everything is just on Facebook. So if you haven't...
And notes.
Yeah.
Write notes. They're great.
they're the best. They're the best. If you haven't given up Facebook in disgust, go ahead and join our group just to see Roy taking notes live, which he puts live on Facebook. Okay. Well, that's it, gents. I am starving. I'm considering eating some beef, but I'm going to refrain. So I'm going to go eat. You guys do anything tonight?
Are you pulling up to my house? Because I'm your beef.
No, you are. You know.
All right.
Okay, you guys good?
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to talk, gentlemen.
All right, that's it for us now.
Thank you, guys. Can you hear me okay, Matt Beard? Does it sound okay?
It sounds like you always sound, which is not okay, I would say.
Uninterested.
Before I left the Cafe Rio, I just stuck my head under the horchata nozzle and just drank about 2 gallons of horchata, and then I brought a glass home.
Dude, I love horchata. They do such a good job.
John says he makes it and he knows how to make it, but I've always assumed that they've just had a big bowl of Cinnamon Toast Crunch and then drained out the milk. There you
That's
go.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yes, I have actually had John's horchata.
Does John make a good horchata?
He does.
Oh, good.
That's all right, especially when I mix it with the nog. We do nog chatas in the summer.
Oh, my goodness.
It may be his most brilliant invention.
Yeah.
That sounds really good.
It took me a long time to realize that I just had these two drinks that I made and to just, like, oh, I could just pour them into the same pitcher. Yeah.
it's like the Voltron of drinks.
He couldn't wait for school to start.
Yeah, yeah. So, hey, what are you unwrapping over there?
Oh, sorry.
Oh, it sounded so good. Was it a burger? I'm so very hungry.
No. Really? I made like a ton. Dang it. You should come over and do this to my house because I made a ton of bratwurst.
Can I eat bratwurst? What is bratwurst?
Well, it can be any number of meats.
Is that a pig? I'm not eating cows for the new year. That's what I'm doing. And,
no, that's not a thing.
I just ate a bunch of carrots just now. I'm going to go have a turkey sandwich shortly, so I'll be fine.
Okay.
Why am I this way? Okay.
Pinocchio.